Hello, everyone. Welcome
to what is this called?
I don't know. I'm so used to doing our intro, like welcome to Cataloging Cocktails. But this is welcome to the Data Rant, the Friday Data Rant
with beers and BS, but you would want to think about. But we're not BS.
Ones and beers and beers and I don't know.
Anyways.
Rants. It's Friday rants.
Okay.
So,
what's on your mind? All right, just right now we're starting to go. Well, we were already ranting on.
We already started ranting on something. We
on skills.
We jumped the gun.
MCP.
So, this is interesting because I'm seeing a trend now of a few people talking about this, and I'll call out two people. One's Eric Baroda, another is Sanjeev Mohan, that have brought up this idea of MCP versus skills. So for the last, I want to say like 6 to 12 months, MCP has been very, very popular as like, oh, this is the way that we're going to expose like contextual action from tools, right? From different software and apps. But now there's a more recent trend, which is saying, or a hot take that's starting to become less of a hot take because it's a lot of people saying it now. MCP is gonna start to fade. A couple of people are saying MCP is dead. Like, oh my God, fuck. Like, stop saying this. Like, blah is dead. Like, please. MCP is not dead. It's growing like crazy. But they're saying, okay, MCP is not the thing. Really, skills are the thing. Like, you're gonna upload and add skills or have skill marketplaces that are directly incorporated into Anthropic, right? They have their Claude skills, right? Or you've got the OpenAI GPT skills, right? Because it's faster, because it's easier, because the path to something that's smart and usable and trusted
lower
is
friction.
Faster. It's faster.
Yeah, just lower the entry barrier and less friction you can start off.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah, sure. I mean, I know that even at ServiceNow, we use a lot of Claude skills. There's a bunch of them that are pretty popular right now internally. But then even in Eric's post, he talks about how, but you know, it'd be nice to have more interoperability and standardization amongst skills. And it's like, okay, well, that's obviously the point of MCP is to be standard, have like a standard interface to be able to interact with different applications via AI. So we were ranting just before this, like, the pendulum, it's constantly swinging. It's like easy versus repeatable. Easy versus interoperable.
That's a good point. I mean, yeah. But the interoperable and reusable is less easy, right? There's a little bit more work to be done. But because you do this all the work, like then it ends up being repeatable. It's something you can actually go trust more. Like if I just want to get something cool off and running and do it, like, yes, I mean, I think everybody's been looking at, even if you were like literally under the rock and you didn't want to go pay attention to any AI stuff this weekend, somehow it came to you about all this open cloud stuff. Like, it's just that, like, it was so easy that all this shit can happen.
It's just that MCP is not that hard.
Yeah,
I mean, and so like, it's not like you're saying like,
are you going to get an old man rant and sort of say that that people are too lazy now, this next generation is too
lazy. Maybe, because we're not saying like you need to build some complicated master solution or something like that. But just, it's MCP server. You can make an MCP server in an afternoon using Claude code, you know? So anyways, I don't know. You have any thoughts on that?
I just, pendulum swinging. This is, I mean, I think that's probably another t-shirt. Pendulum swinging.
The pendulum swings.
Oh, yeah. So we'll see what happens.
In small print, it'll be like, I'm old. I'm an old data man.
All right.
Anyways, I'm curious about, you know, for those who are listening, you know, have you played around with MCP? Have you played around with skills? What's your take? Is MCP dead? Or, you know, my personal thing is I think skills are easy. You're going to see a proliferation of skills. But MCP is alive and well. And I know some folks who are involved very closely with the MCP spec, including one of our coworkers, Sugant. And MCP is going to keep evolving.
Yeah.
And so I say don't sleep on MCP. I think it's going to continue to grow like crazy. And it's growing faster than A to A. I think MCP use cases are more highly proliferated. So.
And I think it also goes back to what are you trying to go do at what levels? It's something cool and fun more, consumer versus like, oh, no, this needs to be well thought out because it's going to our company or enterprise, right?
Right, customers, exactly.
Have a bigger implication. So then you have governance. All that stuff,
I mean, like a skill is probably good for like, oh, you want to create a PowerPoint. Okay, a PowerPoint skill. Okay, that makes sense, right? You want to access a database? I don't know if you're going to have like a database skill. He's an MCP server. So anyways, it's going to be interesting to see how this evolves.
All right. What else?
You kicked this one
off. No, the other one is the whole, context graph, context chart, all that stuff. But I want to combine it with something else, which is decisions. Mm-hmm. And actually, I want to call out somebody I finally met today. So David Bidsley, a Gartner analyst, mm-hmm. but actually,
he posts a lot on LinkedIn, right?
He posts a lot on LinkedIn. I really love it because he's really, really generous with everything that he's thinking about, right? So, and actually, it's really very thought provoking thinking about it. It really makes us think more about it, especially this whole decisional intelligence platform stuff. And one of the stuff that I find interesting around this is that it has been like somewhat abstract for me for so long, all this like dealing with decisions, but if I zoom out and I'm like, I'm seeing all this conversation about decision intelligence platforms and all this stuff about context graphs, and you think about ontologies and you add in the knowledge graph and stuff, it's really people now realizing that we need to start codifying our knowledge. Mm-hmm. And that knowledge can be seen in so many different aspects. It can be all the way from like a basic schema to adding business rules, constraints, adding now what is our decisions, how do we write these decisions, what is the business processes, and people realizing, well, we need to turn this into something code, something that we can actually go operate, because before we don't even treat it as it's still in our heads or in documents or whatever. And I think that's the shift that's happening. There's so many threads happening, but at the end, if I zoom out, it's like, oh, it goes back to what we've talked about years ago, right? We live in a data first world, we're shifting to a knowledge first world. And we need to have a shift from knowledge first world. All of this is for me just a manifestation that we are shifting towards that knowledge first world, where it's we call it, what is it, people first.
People first, relationships first, context first.
Right? Yeah. We should find a talk that we did about this a long time.
Yeah, it was like 2021 or something like that.
I remember this was early in the pandemic that you and both of us were able to escape for a weekend and went to some.
Went to like Fredericksburg or something.
We could like, let's go out. Let's go.
We were like drinking wine and talking about like,
how's the world going to adjust in the
age? We just wanted to get out of our way. We left with knowledge first. That was the takeaway. That was good. So David Pidsley, right? He's been posting a lot about like one of the central theses that he has is it's not just about the data. Like we're kind of leaving this 15-year period.
We need to be data driven.
Of like, you got to be data driven, right? Data culture, data literacy, right? It's all about the data. And he says that we're going to shift to a new D, and that new D is decision. We have to be a decision first organization. We need to have clear decision making. We have clear decision lineage, understanding of our decisions and the outcomes and the impact of the decisions. Right?
And
so it's about the decisions.
And it's actually defining how you make the decisions. And for some things, they're going to be well defined. And for other things, you probably have to go discover how that's happening. And then once you've actually keep track of all of these decisions, then you actually have the lineage to be able to understand what is the impact, and then later how to improve things if you need it. Right?
And in this world of decisions, right, this is not some newfangled idea. There has been a space around for really decades now, which is decision intelligence. Mm-hmm. And decision intelligence tools, it's not necessarily kind of the sexiest space ever, right? There's some newer players in it, but it's a space that's been around for a while. And it's, the quintessential examples are like, you need to, decide whether or not you're going to give somebody a mortgage, right? And like, there's a set of rules, there's a couple of steps that are maybe a little more machine learning oriented, you've got like FICO scores and things like that. So like, there's a very rich, complicated, but ultimately, although there might be some non-deterministic steps, it's a mostly deterministic process that results in should I grant you a mortgage or not, and what are the conditions of that mortgage. Another example is airline upgrades, right? Like, how do I know whether or not I should offer Juan Cicada immediate upgrade because he deserves it.
I'll tell you, on United right now, what happens if you actually have high status, you don't get offers for it. if not, that would have reverse engineer. Like, if you don't have a status, you actually get better offers than if you have a status.
Yeah. So secretly, Juan wants to understand decision intelligence so he can maximize his upgrades more. But so decision intelligence is the space that's been around for a while, right? And you know, today now we're talking about things like context graphs, and it's all about the decision traces. You got to understand how was the decision supposed to be, but then what actually happened? What was the actual decision, right? And
actually, how the agent itself. And I think that's the distinction here is that there is like a lot of the conversation about the context graph is like this is like the output of what an agent is doing, but I think there's also what we need to understand is like. Well, there's still kind of call it the quote unquote legacy world, which is how everybody else is working. Like, I think that's a part that we really want to understand today. I mean, I was talking to another company that they're like, well, if we need to go we want to understand what is the incentives, for example, in procurement and what decisions they make for that. But that decision, and they're like, wait, I have an incentive. I did great. Decision's been made. Perfect. But that decision is going to affect somebody else's process that they're doing and the decisions they need to go make. So now, for example, in the warehousing logistics, they're like, wait, procurement did a great job, but now what you just did is that you just purchased a bunch of stuff early on. Like now I have to go hold all this stuff that you ordered because you ordered for more time to be able to get a discount, whatever. I was not planning for that stuff. And I find that after the fact, right? So these are all the decision traces. And first of all, it's like, we don't even know how these things get counted today, right? Somebody knows after the fact when they're like, here's your job order that you have to go work on. Like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah. Well, and what's complicated about analyzing these, both designing and analyzing what actually happened around these decisions is that even though you want these decisions to happen in a, first of all, a structured process, and second of all, in a structured data and a structured system, oftentimes these exceptions happen outside of the system, and a lot of times they're unstructured in nature. And if you have imagine you're omniscient, you're this omniscient God, right? And you see all that happened related to something, then you might find like, oh, at 10:30 p.m., somebody sent a Teams message to the director of mortgages. And he said, just go ahead and grant it. In Teams, right? And that was what overrode the decision, right? And that's the kind of stuff that's like, oh wow, we need to somehow capture all this context somehow.
I sometimes think that we're now thinking about a lot of edge cases and boiling the ocean around this stuff. I mean, there's now we should be tracking every single conversation because maybe we just jump on Zoom and we got a conversation for 30 minutes and then with the result of the conversation is when we make a decision. So what am I supposed to like? I guess technically that's what we should be able to do, but I think that is the juice worth the squeeze.
So I think where the juice can be worth the squeeze is if it's not just about the exceptions, but helping you understand the decisions overall in the first place. Because then it's about looking at trends of how decisions have been made over time, including exceptions, and how often do those exceptions happen, right? So I think that's interesting, because now you're looking at it from more of a global perspective. If you just want to focus on the exceptions, I mean, they're exceptions. Like, they don't happen often enough for you to be worth all your time, right? But if you're looking at the bigger picture, I think that's interesting.
So there's a lot, I'm really curious what's going to come out of this, because I don't know if it's so much little noise that it's going to build up. It's actually going to be a big shift and something brand new and wow, or everybody's talking about it. And then it's like, yeah, we're doing that. And it's becoming the features. I think that's kind of my whole point, that a lot of this is going to be features of these decision intelligence platforms. It's going to be features of these action platforms or these analytic, I don't know. I think that's where we're going to go see what happens. Now, of course, some people, especially in the startup and the VC space, like, no, this is a brand new platform. We're going to be like, well, for that to be to really be the gigantic kind of opportunity, that means that you have to start getting embedded in all organizations. And I think who has the advantage of that is all the platforms that are already embedded in that.
The bigger platform players.
So, yeah. Right, all the hyperscalers, all the platforms that are already embedded, and for them, it's like, yeah, new features. Now, Will they be able to innovate fast enough? And again, this is again, pendulum swings all the time. So we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, I think the idea, I mean, clearly 2026 is going to be the year of context. I think that's pretty clear right now. And is context, you know, it, does every enterprise need to establish a context layer? Yes. Do they need to treat knowledge and context as first-class citizens? Yes.
By the way, this is already a huge win because this is shit that I've been trying to say for a decade.
People, so 2 years ago, people weren't saying this, right?
No. Like
they were saying AI is going to eat the world, right? And the reality is like, oh shit, just kidding. It needs context, right? So, I mean, context is going to be a thing. And I think that we're getting this whole context graph debate, whether you like it or not, is I think helping us refine our language around what kinds of context graphs that we're talking about, right? Like there's decisions and decision traces. That's like one kind of context, right?
There's people,
there's your organization and things like that. There's also this concept of, you know, and I've seen, you know, some different groups talking about this, a personal graph, which is that there's stuff about you personally as you've engaged with something that are your preferences, you know, some of it's more unstructured, like your kind of your preferences or your communication. Some of it's more structured, like what is Juan Cicada allowed to do? What are your access control, you know, permissions, right? That's more structured information. So, you know, personal graphs, organizational graphs, global graphs, you know.
I mean, each one of these are their
different
their
context,
own different context
scales.
So here's what's interesting is that like recently, I think this week or the last 2 weeks, OpenAI had a whole thing that they described. I mean, Gleam just literally today published something around this stuff.
Yeah. Everybody's kind of publishing what's their architecture around
context. But what's interesting is that this doesn't just happen overnight. Like there is work to be done. And I think that's, for me, that's the most important aspect about this. People are realizing we need to, yes, context is king, we need to go treat this as a first class citizen. But this doesn't just magically come out of anywhere. There is no magic wand. People have been trying the magic wand and realize, oh wait, there's work that needs to be done around the stuff. So for me, that's a big what I'm really excited about is that people realizing, yes, we need to go treat knowledge as a first class citizen. It's a social technical phenomenon we need to go deal with. We can go automate some stuff, but people need to be involved. And I think we're right now in the really excited phase. And I think it's going to kind of like, how do you build this stuff? I'm like, okay. I can give you a demo, but all right, I want to go test this on my stuff, right? How do I, what do I connect to get my context in there? Fill in this form, and then it's kind of like you're going to connect to what system.
Yeah, how are we going to capture all the context? Well, and you know what? Here's an interesting problem, though, that we're going to run into, which is do data leaders care about context? I mean, obviously, like,
oh, this is leading, okay.
People that,
okay,
in,
let's,
you
this
know,
is a good one. So this
we're
is,
talking about.
All right,
context.
Let's go to this. Brings
vendors
up another,
want you to care about context, right? Like,
okay,
but like,
perfect.
Is a chief
think,
data officer like? What conversation are we having where they're like, is the chief data officer? Are they waking up in the middle of the night being like, I have a context problem?
Yeah. So this brings up like another
I mean,
rant.
They do, but like,
but companies don't have a data problem. They don't have really. I mean, they think they do have an AI problem, but the AI problem is not really their focus. Like, they have a work problem. I just need to get our work done. I need to get more work done. I need to be more efficient with the way I get work done. Like, that's what organizations are trying to go do. How do I do more with less? It's a work problem. So the question is, what do we do such that we can be more effective with the work that needs to be done? So first of all, that begs the question is, where does that work happen today? So I think this is the question that I think every organization right now, like, you should be thinking, where do I do my work, right? I'm not going to, without naming vendors or anything, like, just think about where does your employees, they wake up, they go to work, like, where do they sign in? What do they go
do? Log into their laptop.
What are they operating?
Stuff,
right? Yeah. What is the work they need to go do? And what is the stuff that I need so the work can be better? And so even, I've been talking to a bunch of companies, and you too, but like, what I've been kind of really distilling things is like, think like four aspects about it. One, there needs to be more data. Yes, we need to bring more data to the work to be done things, right? So because people are now taking their work down to the data, well, I have to go to this place, they're swivel chairing. I think it's all about like then there's actually like the insights that people do. Oh, we identified this, what this is, this interesting new thing. Okay, but don't tell me I have to go somewhere else to a dashboard to realize that. You didn't tell me, put that to where the work is. And there's also the governance aspect of things, like to make sure that you're doing the right work and so forth. And I think that's kind of the what I'm seeing now, people, is like, where are you doing work? And to do that work, I need data. So do I need to go out and reach out to data other places? Can I bring that in? Do I have all the context to that work? Do I need to go to, is that context live somewhere else? How do I bring it to where my work is? The insights, where do I go to the dashboard somewhere else? Where I bring the results of those dashboards insights to where the work is happening? And then the governance, making sure that I'm like keeping track of what's happening, that I can do things faster and safer. So that's kind of been a peer of like a pattern that I'm seeing with folks. I don't know. What have you been seeing?
No, I think that resonates with me as well. So you're talking about data, knowledge, and governance, essentially, is these sort of three tenets to how things are evolving in terms of how people need to manage context, essentially. This all kind of ties back to this context problem. You need the right data with the right knowledge with the right governance. I think one thing I'll layer on is sort of a maturity model, because I think that companies are trying to figure out how to spend their time. What is my job right now as like a data architect or a data leader? Like, what am I trying to do right now? Obviously you're trying to drive results and ROI and outcomes and things like that, right? That's kind of one side of it. The other side of it is you're trying to create, what we've called the enterprise brain within the organization, because AI is coming in, but you need to make sure that it's safe, effective, precise, and impactful. And I'll kind of say that I see kind of three steps from the companies that we're talking to that it's emerging. But if you're sort of on your AI readiness journey or whatever you want to call it, right? The first step is more like foundation or just basic kind of readiness, which is more around like, okay, I need to know the data and knowledge that exists. So there's a baseline level of discovery. And then there's pick a use case that is impactful and actually drive the data, knowledge, and governance around that one particular use case, get it into production,
make it value. And I think this is different from like people are like, oh, go invest in your foundations, and your foundations is your first step in your maturity. Like, and no, because if you only do foundations, you're actually not delivering any value right there. And I think it goes back to like we posted the episode today with Juan Guaricho, where we talked about, he talked about like, you got to do this in slices. You take a slice of a use case, you take one use case around it, you take a slice of the little fundamentals you want to go do, a slice of data, slice of knowledge, a slice of the insights, a slice of the governance to go do that, and just prioritize it.
You need your foundation. So I don't want to say you don't need your foundation, but here's an analogy, right? That's your like umbrella insurance policy is your foundation. You're not going to become a rich person with insurance, right? But you need it. It's very important, right? But where are you going to make all your money? You're going to make it from your investments, right? And so these use cases, these slices are your investments. That's where you're going to make your money.
I wonder how many people are listening right now and saying, I don't have any umbrella insurance.
Hey, children, buy insurance. Every once in a while, my wife's like, well, how much of insurance policy do we have again? I'm like, why do you ask? I do have life insurance. but your investments are where you're going to make your money, right? So readiness is important. But then in this AI age, you want to start to achieve repeatability. And that's where really, as you're starting to move to repeatability, it's not about a single use case. It's about, you want to create a use case factory, right? And in that, things like building out your knowledge graph, building out your context layer, becomes super valuable, because then it allows 1 + 1 to be greater than 2 from a value perspective, but 1 + 1 to be less than 2 from an investment perspective, from a time perspective. You're getting increasing returns.
So that's when you start
the flywheel.
The repeatability right there, the reusability.
Yeah. Yep. And this matters so much in the world of AI. Like, I think it was a little less clear pre-AI. It's very clear now in the world of AI. And then the third stage is scale, right? When you get to this state where you've got this repeatable layer, now you're able to really unlock more of these, like autonomous IT, autonomous customer management, autonomous support, autonomous this, autonomous that, right? Autonomous data management, right? Then you can unlock those things because you have this repeatable engine. So I think the companies are really starting to think more in this way. Mm-hmm. When in the past it was, you know, what was maturity in the past? It was really more about, like, you know, did we check all the boxes on sort of the data management checklist or something like that? Where now it's really, there's a new, I think, framing on everything.
I think the at the end of the day, it's all obvious, you know, say the obvious over and over again. The quick wins, right? So do something small, start small, think big type of thing, right? So that first level of maturity here is actually focus on deliver one. And the second is where you can now deliver a handful with the investment of one. So this is, and then the third one is, oh, I kind of figure out my muscle, like this stuff is just now kind of going in autonomous. That's kind of
yeah. By then now you actually have the enterprise brand in place. How many people have achieved this scaled motion? I think nobody.
But I think that's the way.
But that's the North Star we're heading towards.
I like it.
Some people are establishing repeatable.
I have to think about, is it what else? Is it really these three steps? I know three is too little, four is too much, but is there something else? Or
three is the perfect number.
All right, anything else?
I don't know. Is there anything else we're forgetting?
We'll be in New York next week. For folks who are listening, we're going to be somewhere Wednesday. We'll post on LinkedIn Wednesday happy hour.
Yep. So come hang out with us in New York City.
It's going to be very direct. We'll be in the Hudson Yard. That's where our offices are. So probably keep it easy.
Yeah, that'll be easy.
So, yeah.
And for those who are football fans, enjoy the Super Bowl.
Sunday will be a fun day.
Go Seahawks.
I don't care. Obviously.
One doesn't care.
All right. And then I don't know if we'll do this next Friday. We'll see.
We'll see what happens.
All right. Cheers.
Cheers, everyone.